there's no better feeling than a personal win. And the State Farm Personal Price Plan can help you do just that. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello and welcome back to the Stadio Podcast. I'm Musa Kwonga.
I'm Ryan Hun.
Ryan, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm all right, thanks, man. How are you?
I am wonderful. I had a magical weekend with some dear friends and watched some great football at the end of it. So yeah, I'm great.
That sounds good.
Very good. It's great.
Some wonderful football, eh?
Oh, dude, this
you
game.
You must be referring to the Frankfurt-Hoffenheim game.
I knew it.
Always. Listen, man, goals and red cards. Listen, we can all pretend that we want out of possession and low blocks and half spaces. We don't. We just want red cards and goals. I'm a simple man. We hope everyone's staying safe, staying well. Tiny bit of admin. Righty's house will be recorded after Arsenal's game against Porto. Ian and I will be recording that straight after the game, and we'll try and get it up that night, but it might go up late. So for you, those of you in Europe, it might not be ready to listen to until you're up in the morning. But other than that, usual stuff really. So yeah, today we're going to focus on Liverpool's game against Man City. That'll take up the bulk of the time, and then I think we'll do a quick wrap up of other stuff. Should we just go straight into it?
Let's do it. Let's do it.
Let's go straight into it. Okay, yeah. So Liverpool won. Manchester City won at Anfield. A wonderful game of football for a neutral. I imagine for a fan of either side, it was complete hell.
Or for an Arsenal fan, potentially.
No, I had a great time. The only thing I was a little disappointed with was that there could have been a few more red cards.
There probably should have been at least one.
Probably, yeah. Actually.
Yeah, it should have been at least one.
I was kind of itching for. Well, put it this way: when Rodri got booked, the first thing I did was check how many games there were between now and the Arsenal game. I was like, "Is he going to get another one? Will it actually help?" But anyway, yeah, a wonderful game of football. Very entertaining. And the last time, as you may have heard, it's the last time that Klopp and Guardiola will face off as managers of these two teams at Anfield. So yeah, how did you feel about it?
I absolutely loved it. It was, I thought Liverpool were superb. Reminded me, funnily enough, in some ways of Aston Villa's 1-0 win over City at Villa Park, where Villa came out and played football and were really bold and just overwhelmed Man City with their intensity. Like, with the exception of the first 15 minutes, and we'll talk about everything that ensued, I thought Liverpool were, even when City took the lead, Liverpool were the better team, in my opinion. I thought Liverpool were spectacular, actually. And that isn't to sort of do City down, because a lot of City's early play, the first 15 minutes for Man City were...
Yeah, they were brilliant.
Dude, the way they moved the ball, they seemed to do this thing. So obviously the game ended 1-1, but we'll sort of do a quick sort of recap or get into it. Just in terms of the first 15 minutes to talk about what City did there, I saw the team sheet and I was immediately worried for Liverpool. And this is not to knock Liverpool. It was more like looking at that back four, I thought the frightening bit there, the mismatch of Foden and Gomez. Full respect to Gomez, plays along the back line, And in this game as well, I think the thing I respect so much about him is his resilience. A couple of times he gets isolated against Doku second half and first half against Foden, but he keeps coming back and he has intensity. But I felt there was a mismatch there. Other thing that concerned me was he had Kwanzaa and Bradley, a very, very young side of that partnership. And I think it's almost, I don't think it's an accident that that was targeted. We saw some transitions in the first 10, 15 minutes of that game. We actually saw Van Dijk come across. I don't know if he does that often for Liverpool, but he switched with Kwanzaa for like about 5-10 minutes.
Mm.
And I thought, because he was getting involved in the build-up, there's a couple of times Kwanzaa was playing out and got away with it. Not got away with it, he looked quite good. But I felt like almost Van Dijk was talking a lot in the first 10 minutes. It felt like a goal then from City, like in the first 10, not in the first 20, but the first 10, I really felt they could have racked up a score. But to Liverpool's credit, dude, Conor Bradley, he got into it with Pep. I mean, this was amazing.
Oh yeah, this was like super early, right?
Do you know what I love about this? Like, you talk about a player being fully locked in. He was so good. I'm not convinced that, this is heresy, I'm about to say it. I'm not convinced that in context, a fully fit Trent Alexander-Arnold gives you vastly more than Bradley gave in the first 25 minutes.
I think they give you different things, right? I think there's an inherent like kind of physicality and athleticism about Bradley that
and the combination
secures,
too.
Just
the
secures that right hand side a little bit more
in a game like that.
Yeah, now I think, you know, obviously don't want to make this a Trent thing when he wasn't even playing, but I think Trent gives you vastly different things. For example, I think if you're going to have all of the ball, Trent is a, you know, I kind of see Trent as more of a, now this isn't comparing them because I think Trent is a better fullback, but it's kind of like Arsenal's Zinchenko problem in a way.
Yes.
You know, it gives you different things. There's a massive upside. You also have to sacrifice a certain number of things. But I don't think Trent's ever been as bad a defender as people make him out. I just think it's a different kind of player, right?
Let me draw a comparison that makes it sound less personal. It's almost like Elliot and Mo Salah in the sense that Harvey Elliott was so, so good that, you know, we know that Mo Salah's better. We know that Trent's better than Bradley, but those players put in performances so, so good that Salah and Trent, I can't believe I'm saying this, were not substantially missed. Like, I didn't watch Liverpool and think, wow, like Mo Salah is desperately missed. Harvey Elliott.
Well, he's got a ton of goals through that run as well. Like, you know.
I don't, it's really exciting to see young players go out against the team that is one of the best club sides I will ever see and play with such intensity.
Mm.
Can we say as well, we're talking about young players, but I also want to talk about Alexis McAllister setting the tone so early. This man was hunting John Stones in the early minutes.
Yeah, I thought Liverpool's midfield did pretty well actually against the way that midfield.
They knew exactly when to step up. Yeah.
Yeah. I think considering that this was Szoboszlai's first start since coming back from injury. He's only had like quarter of an hour in the Europa League game or something. And you could see there was a bit of rust there, but I still, that physicality that he brings in that midfield, I think was a real, real help for Liverpool because it allowed Endo to be the kind of metronomic, keep the ball circulation. There were a couple of times actually where I think if there was better movement in front of him, in the first half in particular, I think Liverpool maybe could have created a little bit more in that first half. They worked their way into the game. Like you said, I think City created the early opportunities. They had the corners. They had a couple of shots on goal.
Mm.
And it wasn't really until maybe like a third of the way through that first half after City scored really, that Liverpool started to really wrestle control of the game. Not control, but more control of the game than they had in that early period. And they looked a lot more assured. You know, Liverpool had the majority of the second half. They were far better than City in the second half, I think, overall.
Mm.
Had a couple of really clear-cut opportunities where they could have, Luis Diaz had a couple and should have put one or two away at least. They obviously had the penalty not long after half-time. You know, this City side, for example, are so automatic. Mm. In what they know they need to do, and they're, you know, the way that they circulate the ball, the movements they make. You saw just little things where there'd just be 3, 4, 5 yard little dashes from midfielders all of a sudden in complete loads of space in the middle of the park, and then they're onto Liverpool's back four.
Mm.
That kind of stuff comes from years and years and years of drilling, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I think Liverpool have that, but in a different way. Mm. We've talked about their ability just to almost like regenerate, right? Mm. Plug and play. But it doesn't really matter who they put in there. There is a very similar, and I think maybe the emotional component works with that as well, where there's such a common goal for the rest of the season. It's just win everything, 4 o'clock before he goes.
Yeah.
And everyone knows their job. But I think that's what made it so impressive, is just that Liverpool didn't look like they were missing a load of people.
Yeah.
And I know they're getting players back now, but still, you know, in terms of everyone being fully fit, if you kind of just didn't look at the lineup and looked at the result and looked at the kind of stats breakdown, you'd be like, oh, Liverpool are full strength.
Right. And, it's unreal.
And they weren't. This isn't to criticize City in any way. I just think it goes to this rivalry. I think even if all of the games aren't super spectacular, like when you get two sides who are operating as, who have consistently operated at such a high level for so long, sometimes you're just going to cancel each other out.
You know, it's funny that you say that, but I the thing about the City Liverpool games is how exciting they are. If I think of like the one or draw earlier this season, the one we always talk about when Bernardo Silva was just lights out brilliant a couple of years ago, and it was 2-1 City.
The Etihad.
Yeah, unbelievable. Mm. Still one of the best games I've ever seen.
And one of the most like intense football games I've ever watched.
Unbelievable, yeah. Right? And everyone technically was just off the scale. Watching this game with friends this weekend, and you're just marveling at the simple things like Rodri. The first 15, 20 minutes of this game, until he plays a loose pass into real danger, and then you know it's trouble. When Rodri plays a pass that's loose over, let's be honest, 5 yards, let alone 20, you know it's bad. There were things Rodri was doing in the first 15 minutes. He chips this ball out of nowhere down the right flank, Foden's in space.
And then he gets the ball back.
Dude,
it was like the most elaborate one too. Of all.
It's the most, the way that man punches the ball in and out and never sprints, but it's like always got room, turns away from trouble. Like you could isolate the first, like you could just study the first 12 minutes of that game as a Man City masterclass on how to shift the ball. In itself. And Liverpool's credit, if you look at the passing stats and everything, Liverpool had more passes, the XG, they were ahead and all of that. It's remarkable what they did. And I want to just sort of emphasize again.
I think if you take the penalty out, it kind of levels.
Absolutely. But even the penalty is interesting, because that pass from Ake back to Edison at the start of the second half, the speed Darwin is onto that.
It doesn't look it's on when it leaves Ake's foot.
I think that foul by Edison, what saves him, I think, from the red in a funny way, is not just the fact that I think he gets injured, but also, like, it's clearly not a thing about a desire to harm. I think he panics because Darwin is light speed. And I think Darwin maybe learned his lesson, because in the first half, when it's still 0-0, I think he should have scored that one that Bradley drills across goal. Because when Bradley gets it, about 30 yards from goal, if you look up at the two people making a run, Diaz is cutting and Darwin's cutting, they don't sprint early enough.
Mm.
They hold their run far too long. And when that ball gets drilled across goal, they should both be colliding with the far post. They should have both been coming a lot steeper. So I was really impressed with how Darwin, like sometimes, you know, he got the offsides, but that was also a sign that he was really pushing that line as high as possible. And a consistent theme of Liverpool is, we've said this before, the way they're harnessing the emotional aspect of Klopp leaving, they're not doing it in a disciplined way. Like McAllister was so feisty. You saw him twice. To be honest, it was borderline fouling Stones. But that was the type of attention that Stones doesn't really get that high up the pitch. Like, I don't think Stones really gets policed that deep in City's half. It felt like the moment he crossed a certain point, bang, McAllister's on him. Endo was brilliant. You know, we said Szoboszlai was slightly off the pace, and I think his touch wasn't quite there. But if he was as locked in, you wouldn't expect him to be, as Endo and McAllister, I think Liverpool win this. And I'm talking about them in midfield specifically, because I think that we've said this before, Endo in particular goes a bit under the radar in terms of how well he's playing. But they went up against the best midfield backcourt, Stones and Rodri, in the world. And they did so well against them that Bernardo Silva started losing a bit of composure. I thought he was slightly lucky to stay on, actually.
Silva?
Yeah, I think so. I think But he got moved out of the middle, which is also interesting. But I think he was slightly lucky to stay on the pitch in terms of when Pep made the changes.
Oh, so not ascending off? Because I was trying
I think he was slightly lucky in because Pep's whole thing was we were losing match control. De Bruyne was losing the ball. I don't know. I felt like, it's Pep Guardiola. Who am I to second guess him? At the same time, City really lost attacking impetus when he went off the pitch, De Bruyne. And I felt they invited pressure. I thought...
Yeah, I think it worked in a little bit of what Pep was trying to do in a sense that bring on Kovacic to just shore up the midfield a little bit in terms of keeping possession and then allow Doku to almost be like the person who's let them kind of do their thing, use their individual ability
like against
a tiring back four to maybe create some. And to be fair, Doku created a couple of...
Nearly got the winner.
Nearly got one or two. But Kovacic is an interesting one because I actually forgot to do something. I don't know why I decided that I was going to do this, so maybe I'll do it or someone else has a chance to go and do it. I've noticed that like, this season, I think he did it for the first time a few months ago. Kovacic has started to tuck his shirt in a little bit more.
Really? Oh, that's interesting.
And I was just going to compare. I was just going to compare stats, like his whether his like passing accuracy had gone up post tuck as opposed to pre tuck. I'm intrigued why players decide to go tuck mid season. Yeah. But whether because some he has his shirt untucked as well. Like, but I don't know.
It does mean something to the extent that it's interesting to me that you characterize Kovacic as a sort of conservative player in that sense, because that's not who Kovacic has been for large stretches, right? So it's funny that Pep has, Pep, we know that he coaches people and he gets more out of them than you might think, but. Funny that almost like a Leverkusen double six is what Pep was kind of trying to end up with.
Well, I wonder whether Pep has tried to say to Kovacic, like, look at what Rodri does and be more like Rodri, and Kovacic has taken that a little bit too literally and just started tucking his shirt in. Anyway, that's just a little kind of detour. But let's talk about the goal.
Yeah, first goal.
Yes, the second goal.
Okay, so ball gets swung over. From the left, and Haaland, who only had about a dozen touches in the entire game, Haaland's coming in hot, and Van Dijk comes across and flicks it clear. And he has got a lot to say to the rest of his defence, as he did for the first 20 minutes. He's like, they were completely under pressure. Mm. So Van Dijk's there organising everyone, but then the City goal is brilliant. De Bruyne whips that in near post, the corner in near post, and Ake pins McAllister. Mm. So Stones is trying to get across Ake's body to cut off Stones, but Stone is unsupervised. McAllister's life to danger. But then it's basically like a pick and roll in basketball.
Well, it's interesting actually because it looks like Ake moves McAllister out the way, but then I think it feels like McAllister, if you look at the replay, McAllister then starts grabbing his arm and almost does Ake's work for him because he's actually pulling him further out of. But there's an interesting thing if you look at the replay from like the other corner, basically. Mm. And this is such a nitpick, but it's not. I don't blame Kelleher for this, but I think you just see how, because Kelleher got over quite well and got a touch on it.
Yeah, yeah.
He reacts ever so slightly late. He's on his heels. And it's one of those that, like, even with that great routine, great movement from Stones, great contact on it, if Kelleher maybe had been on the balls of his feet and moved a fraction of a second earlier, he might have even blocked that, because I think this is one of the great things about this Liverpool run. They haven't missed Alisson at all. I think Kelleher has been
unbelievable,
genuinely brilliant.
Yeah, yeah.
Even with the great, like a well-worked goal from City, he was really close to stopping that.
He was, right? Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
But just a really, really well-worked corner. And I'm already thinking ahead to this year's Stadios, and I think the Prop Joe Award might have to come back because I think it's set piece coaches who experienced the biggest
glow up.
Whose celebrity has increased the most in 2024? Is it referees or is it set piece coaches?
Did Pep pointed at someone after they scored? I think he was going.
Coach.
Yeah, he was like, look at that. You knew.
They cut to him on Sky, man.
It's like you saw the vision.
Sky producers are just like, listen, man, if we're giving Mike Dean this much airtime, then everyone's getting airtime.
Because the way Pep celebrated that goal was even like, yeah, that's the thing we thought could work.
Yeah, apparently, yeah, John Stone said they worked on it the day before in training. So
De Bruyne's delivery,
it was great. I think that to create that much pace with such a low trajectory and stopping it from going out of play, I think was really... Yeah, was
he makes good. A football look like a greasy bar of soap. He does. Like, even the way it skidded.
I was going to say, so the way some of, like, John, the way that Kevin De Bruyne sometimes, like, plays passes, it's this, you know, like, bros in a park in the summer.
And it's frisbee.
And someone always tries to go, like, ultimate frisbee.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
Oh, fucking hell, here we go. It's Kevin De Bruyne passes, man. Just ultimate frisbee.
Curving frisbees around trees, yeah. It's unreal. Ultimate frisbee footballer. But the funny about him is he plays these extravagant passes. There's always a point to them. Like, I know it's a cliche by now to talk about it, but the way he strikes a ball with his supposedly weaker foot is something else, man. Like, the first 12 minutes of that game, it really felt like it was going to be a Kevin De Bruyne masterclass.
Mm.
The one thing I was slightly critical of, you know that minute, but he chips it to the far post, the left foot, and it floats beyond. I wonder if he was thinking, I should just have chipped him. My left foot is good enough. The angle as the ball broke across, it's the last thing I was expecting. I wonder if he slightly replays that. He thinks, actually, my technique's good enough to just gone for goal.
I wonder if he gets caught in two minds, because I think it's closer than it initially looked.
Yeah, way closer, yeah.
I think if he committed to chipping Kelleher, I think he probably would have nestled in that far post.
On the Haaland thing, just quickly as well, because there will be probably a bit of talk about, oh, Haaland was out of the game. Well, that's just the way City play. On the one occasion that he got a clear run, him and Van Dijk going head to head, I thought actually both of them really handled that break well. He just didn't get that much. And whenever Haaland doesn't get much supply, it's normally a systemic problem slightly further down the pitch. And that just speaks to how well Endo and McAllister were playing in terms of shutting off the avenues for Bernardo. Like, after the first, I would say, so 20 minutes, those two, that access really just shut down that area. And we started seeing Kyle Walker was very cute for some of these professional fouls.
I think he should have got booked for the first one. Actually.
Oh, dude, definitely.
Because it completely stops a counter-attack.
Yeah, definitely. I think that was... And he knew...
It's interesting, though, that Liverpool didn't keep going to that strategy, because I think that was kind of luring him out a little bit more. It was surprising that because he took the bait twice.
Mm. Yeah, they did. Look, Luis Diaz, I know he missed a couple, but then I feel like I just want to give him his props, because this man was basically sprinting. He was flat out for 90 minutes and never stopped creating
that run that space. He did in the second half down the left-hand side.
Crossed over Kyle Walker on his...
And Rodri. It was like Kyle Walker and Rodri tracking him down. He got a little bit lucky with the break, but then one falls over, the other one tracks him down, and he tries to cut it back, and he was just like...
How many people beat Kyle Walker on his strong foot?
Yeah, yeah.
Like that, like a proper crossover, like absolutely.
Let's talk about Haaland and Van Dijk, because I think against a player like Haaland, as good as Haaland is, that's the kind of battle that Van Dijk really relishes and thrives in, because...
Contact.
Yeah. You mentioned it before, where Haaland kind of broke through and it looked like got a bit Matrix for a while. It got a bit like 360 camera, where like one was going one way, the other one was going, and then Van Dijk turned around and then Haaland got a slight yard, but not enough. But that was really it. That was the kind of...
I thought it was more like Fast and Furious. You have those two cars, the drag races, side by side.
But Haaland just couldn't press the nose button. Itch.
Yeah, it's like that.
But yeah, apart from that, I think Van Dijk and Kwanzaa just did really, really well.
Really well. Kwanzaa, some of the stuff he did in the first half.
Been so impressed with him.
Can we talk about the turning point in terms of this game? Kwanzaa, I think, was responsible for some of it. He's getting the ball and he's like turning out of trouble. And often he went back to Kelleher, but just that confidence to hold it and then play it back in. If you see where Liverpool play out from primarily, it's down that right flank.
Mm.
They want to shepherd the play there and they want to come out of there. It's actually similar, not to bring Arsenal Porto into it, the same way that you felt that Porto were forcing Arsenal away from the Saka flank to beat them with Martinelli. I felt the same way with this. And I just thought, like, Van Dijk, you're right, getting the physical battle that maybe preferred against Haaland. So knowing exactly what he was dealing with. Kwanzaa as well, that combination. And I was talking to a friend about this. We were having a chat afterwards. He said, it's unbelievable how Konate's not been missed. That's how good Kwanzaa's been. I mean, where are they finding these players?
But this is a common theme from Liverpool this season. It's wild how insert player here has not been missed.
Unbelievable.
It's it's amazing. It's amazing that they've got, like, they've maintained this level, you know, joint top of the on points at the league, second only on goal difference to Arsenal.
I hate to be cheeky here. It's reminiscent of Xabi Alonso's Leverkusen. I hate to float that, but if you look at, like, Xabi Alonso's Leverkusen, the same ability to plug and play, they've been missing Boniface, bringing, you know, Adli, Schick.
Yeah.
I'm just throwing a fortune cookie.
You're being mischievous.
Very much
moving like a man who doesn't have to do the emails.
Yes.
As ever. So we talked about the penalty.
Yes.
It was a penalty.
It was
obviously
a great, and it's beautifully taken too.
Great penalty. Should there have been another one? Well, actually, there were two shouts near the end of the game.
The Doku one with the high foot.
I think the first one on Salah, I don't think it's a penalty.
No. Also, he was, bless him, Salah was selling it. He was really, really, my guy, you were selling that. I think, he was selling it, but I don't think it was a penalty. I think the Doku one.
I think that's a pen.
Dude, like, because I'm by myself going, oh no, but he made contact with the ball. I'm like, what's his foot doing up there? That's a dangerous play.
There is contact with the ball, but I think it looks like it's come before and after depending on which angle you look at.
It's a penalty.
Like, I think it's a penalty. I think it would have, I think it had been given, it wouldn't have been overturned. I think the only reason it's not given is just because Michael Oliver hasn't given it on the field. And I think if that happens 20 minutes from time, he gives it. I think there's just a psychology there, the way it's just...
I think there's something going on.
And it shouldn't be, but you know, this is part of the game and...
The same reason Walker doesn't get a yellow at that point of the game, because the refs think about the flow of the game maybe, and these things subconsciously affect you. Yeah.
And I think it's a penalty. I can understand why Klopp was quite angry about that. I think to be fair to Jeremy Doku, I think he realizes what he's like, oh shit, my foot is high here.
Yeah, right.
And you can see him almost trying like, I need to get my foot out of here. But it's too late. The momentum's already there. He catches him. I thought it was a penalty. But
Doku very much with main character energy, let's say, when he came on. He very much got involved.
Dude. find me a number 11 that doesn't.
It's a big main character.
It's a big, like...
I mean, not to, you know... On the occasion...
used to wear the number 11.
Now I think about it, I was extremely extra when I had the 11. In fact, the higher the squad number...
Hey, you want to talk about high squad numbers? We can talk about Bologna Inter. There were some high squad numbers on that side. But that's Serie A for you. You're always going to get a high squad number. I wonder if you took the average squad numbers of starting 11s over a season, I think Serie A comes out on top. I think it's the only football league that rivals the NFL.
Actually, we have to do a deep dive on Serie A at some point because I feel like that league...
I thought you were going to talk about like the actually doing a deep dive on average squad numbers per starting 11. I was just like, nerd nonsense.
Nerd nonsense.
So I think is that everything on that game?
Anything else in this game? Let me just think. Anybody else I want to sort of shout out? We gave Kelleher a shout, Endo as well.
What do you think about the De Bruyne sub? Because he obviously wasn't happy.
What I loved about this? How many managers do you see sit next to a player and explain the substitution while the game's going on, as respectfully as Pep did? I loved that, to be honest. Mm. I loved everything about this sub. I loved the fact that De Bruyne came off, wasn't happy about it, but there was a point. He wasn't just like ranting. He was like making a point. He was making an argument about the flow of the game. Pep had an argument, and then Pep went over and was like, look, you know what I think of your play. You know what I think of you as a footballer.
Big fan of your work.
Big fan of your work. And I loved that. I thought to myself, I don't think I've ever seen that. And I said to a friend, like, I don't even think it's a generational thing. I just think Pep would have done that in the 70s. If he was coaching the 70s. I just think it's the special relationship those two have. And I am sympathetic to De Bruyne in the sense that some might say, well, you're losing the ball, it's patchy, but I don't know. I feel like the game was chaotic and I felt like that was the chaos in which De Bruyne could have thrived, funnily enough.
Yeah, I mean, there's such a respect there. I think if it's a different player, then they probably get a different reaction. But I think, you know, whenever De Bruyne retires, wherever Pep is, he's gonna be Pep will give him an assistant role if he wants it. He's just that kind of brain. I think he's gonna get that.
And you can see De Bruyne coming around to Pep's way of thinking. Pep's thinking match control. You're losing the ball a bit. We need to tighten this up. And De Bruyne is maybe more like, I don't know, man. Like, keep spinning the chamber because we'll get something out of this. And
I think he was actually saying, "Oh, really? Like, is this the change you made? I mean, if you want, I can just tuck my shirt in."
Yeah,
it's basically
I think, given how the game turned out, they were both right. Actually, they were both right in terms of the outcomes. If Pep
could have won it, could have lost it.
Pep gets the Doku winner. We see it. If he doesn't, and City did need something, like you see Bernardo going out to the flank, Foden coming inside. Foden wasn't that impactful when he came inside. Not that he can't play there, but he wasn't really.
Yeah, I don't think that switch really worked for City.
I don't think so.
No.
So you can imagine De Bruyne afterwards being like, "You see, you see."
But both managers have done this in games before, where they've kind of made slight tweaks, and it's been like,
"Well, Salah didn't do that much. I mean, it's not, you know, Mo Salah didn't do a huge amount when he came on."
Same for the Szoboszlai thing, though, for him, where he's coming back from injury, he's not looking sharp yet. But
so it's not still, these aren't knocks. It's because the margins in a game of this quality, where both teams are of spectacular quality, are infinitesimal. Mm. And sometimes you just don't get the breaks.
Mm-hmm.
Incredible result for Arsenal, who now have bumper goal difference, plus 46, and a point ahead, and are just looking resilient.
Yeah, point ahead of City, level on points with Liverpool.
And can I say as well, if we could...
Let's go from that great game at Anfield to the Emirates. This was a stinky game that just needed to be won and got the fuck out of there.
Love that.
But also, very important that this kind of game happened then, I think.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, I think if Arsenal go in 1-0 at half time, it's a really different second half. I think going in 1-0. And the Ramsdale thing, by the way,
I literally just
think that's just because he's not played. I think it's nothing deeper than that.
I'm a fraction sympathetic as well, in terms of, like, there's a slightly, like, you know, when the ball's coming from the angle of the person pressing him. Actually, weird enough, there's a bit of, it's like 80% Ramsdale, 20% Gable in terms of the pass in. I don't think it's the best pass into.
I think the pass in's fine. I think we talked about this when Ramsdale played at the Brentford away game. It was just literally that every game that Aaron Ramsdale plays, the pressure is massive. I think the rest of the game, he was brilliant, made some really, really good saves. I just think that's reps, man. I think, you know, it's obviously going to be, as soon as it happened, you're like, oh, fucking hell, here we go. This is just going to be a massive talking point.
Yeah,
people are going to dunk on him. But I do think sometimes it's just basic, like rhythm and reps. And that's someone who hasn't played a lot of football this season.
I want to throw this out there as well. There's conversation. Oh, this is the end of his time at Arsenal. Can I just say two words? Victor Valdez. Victor Valdez did this all the damn time in huge matches. And the reason you kept going back to Victor Valdez is because he was an unbelievable goalkeeper who played that style perfectly. And I was having a chat with a dear friend this weekend. We were talking about possible destinations for Ramsdale. And actually, my friend suggested, actually, someone like Bayern, to be honest. And his point was, the quality with which he regulates the ball is elite. His shot stopping is elite. He's just having a bad dip. But he's very much in the sort of Jan Sommer class, in my opinion. And I just think, if he stays at Arsenal, that'd be great, because I think he's a wonderful player. But if he doesn't, there needs to be a long list of elite clubs after a guy like
that. He's a really, really good goalkeeper.
Yeah. And the only reason I'm saying this is because I want to throw a bit of a stone in the pond to try and disrupt the narrative about Ramsdale.
Yeah, but I mean, sometimes it's just one of those. Like, I think at the beginning of the season, I don't think anyone would have thought that Arsenal would have gone for a goalkeeper. I think we talked about this numerous times, so we don't need to go too long on it. But the scrutiny that Ramsdale is now under is something that Raya was under early on in the season when he played, because people love Aaron Ramsdale. So, you know, I was at the City game.
Mm.
And Raya was like driving everyone like wild, because it felt nervous. Raya now is just not that player because he's played.
Yeah, yeah.
Ramsdale hasn't, so.
Exactly, as expected. This is a separate conversation. I had a chat with this friend about how to fix Bayern. I won't say on the podcast because the takes are too hot, but it's along those lines, but Ramsdale will be a big part of it. I just think that
More points than they had at this stage last season. Highest points tally for a number a side that's second in the Bundesliga.
Just and they cooked Mainz as
they
well.
They cooked Mainz on the weekend.
But anyway, back to Premier League.
But yeah, quick question. The thing that drove everyone into a frenzy on social media was the fact that Kai Havertz was still on the pitch to score the winner.
Mm.
I think this is just, I honestly think this is one of those that just wasn't a penalty and wasn't a booking. There is a bump on his hip. He's already going down.
He's selling it.
He sells it, but he doesn't get the, I think it's one of, there is a middle ground. And I understand why any rival fan, especially if like a title rival, was just like being like, how the hell is Havertz not sent off? Like Thomas Frank afterwards was not happy, and understandably, but also I think Arsenal could have had two penalties. They had two huge penalty shouts. I think there's one on Gabriel. He's having his shirt pulled hard.
Right.
And I'm not entirely sure what is a penalty if hooking someone around their neck right in front of the goalkeeper and pulling them down, like as what happened to Trossard, is also not a penalty.
Right, right.
It's they're fouls, right?
They're fouls.
Okay,
they're fouls.
Thank you. I was like, am I the asshole? Am I the asshole?
I mean, possibly, but also they were fouls. They're also fouls.
Spent way too much time talking about this horrible game, by the way. But
one game we should talk about a little bit, Villa.
Yes, please. I wanted to do this actually before we did the Arsenal thing, but because obviously Arsenal going top.
But no, it's important. In context, it was important. Don't worry about it.
Spurs are looking good for the Champions League.
Look, I love Kulusevski. I've always said I loved what he was doing. Parma, Juve, and I loved that signing when they made it. There's just something about the way he stretches the play. The immediacy, I mean, I talked about Di Maria already in this podcast, but the directness, there's a directness to Di Maria's wing play that I think that Kulusevski shares. Love it. 1-2 touches as an opposition player in danger. Emery was really upset with Villa. They've lost 3 times now at home, but this is obviously by far the most decisive defeat in a huge game. McGinn lost a bit of control. Some might argue, should have been in yellow, not a red. Maybe there's an aspect there.
I disagree.
Where, yeah, like, I mean, some might argue that. The wider problem, I think, for this was Villa just got absolutely shredded in the wide areas. And when Son is moving like this, Son and Madison coming at you, interchanging like that, it's the Havertz problem. It's very, very difficult to mark players where the movement is so fluid. Mm. You'd almost rather face a conventional centre forward than this configuration of attackers. And when you've got Johnson, Madison, Son and Kulusevski all combining, that is a horrible problem. So I actually have some sympathy for Villa in that respect. Can I say as well, a shout for Timo Werner, who got a gorgeous fourth goal.
Another really goal for lovely. Timo.
And this finish, you know, the one he got in the last match, obviously more straightforward, is pretty much a tap in, but this one, what I loved about this was the way that he combined with Son, running into one of his favourite pockets. We know that Werner loves the kind of inside left flank, the half space they call them. The cutback from Son, and the kind of Ozil-style finish, the fadeaway finish, gorgeous. And just Son in a level of form. You know, there was talk a year and a half ago about Son being, you know, finished or past his best. But it's just very clear that the best wasn't being coached out of him, I think, it's fair to say, without wanting to point too many fingers.
Spurs just look good, man.
Amazing win for Spurs and a side that's played some spectacular football this year.
If Postecoglou gets him into the Champions League this season, then that is an unbelievable first season for him.
It's wild, isn't it?
Yeah. If you look at the players if you look at the clubs who have not been very good this season and the impact that he's had in his first year at charge, I see stuff when Liverpool play and they're, you know, they're missing players, and I also see the same thing with Spurs. Like quite a lot of Manchester United accounts are saying, look at these two clubs as an example of what can be done with like a single philosophy. And you compare that to Manchester United, who had a good win on Saturday against Everton. I think they rode their luck. And I think Everton were really, really good actually. I think the scoreline definitely flattered Manchester United, but 2 penalties, Garnacho just kind of ran wild. But it's a common critique of Ten Hag's Manchester United in the sense that like, how can these clubs have achieved that in such quick success, in such a short space of time? Not Liverpool in such a short space of time. Sorry, let's maybe focus on Spurs.
Yeah.
And Manchester United still seem to be struggling under Ten Hag with that. And what is the kind of the, you know, what is the way that they want to play? It's, I think it can be quite hard to identify. But, you know, picking up a home win against Everton, I think that Saturday lunchtime kickoff is always just a bit but what do you think about it as a United fan?
Just a good win. Just a good win. Everton, a team, a bit of a bounce, haven't got some points back. Resilient. And look, I don't want to be too churlish. It's a good home win over an Everton team whose position, even without the points deduction, I think Everton's points were slightly, didn't give them quite the return that they, in terms of what they've been playing. A bit like Luton, where the quality of the football they've been playing is not quite reflected in the league position of the points total.
Mm.
But beyond that, I mean, there was a 6-point gap between United and Villa, who weirdly they've beaten.
8 points between Villa, 6 points between Spurs.
And Spurs, Spurs, United. Weirdly, because United have beaten Villa twice. It's one of the oddities this season. But I feel like that's a clear gap, actually. There's a clear gap between those teams and United. And I think if you look at the teams above United, in terms of what they all have, there's a fluidity in the attack. I think that's the, there's an imagination in the final third in terms of creating chances. When you see United make chances, it's still too much of the kind of, it's the soloist.
Mm-hmm.
It's elite solo artists performing within a framework where they're given a measure of freedom, don't get me wrong, but I'm not seeing enough. I'm only seeing it in patches. I'm not seeing enough high tempo combination play, which is the hallmark of a consistent Champions League team and a Premier League challenger. And that is the gap. And it's sad to say this too. It's sad to sort of criticize Brighton in this respect, but that is the one thing I think, you know, Brighton defensively had issues this year, but I think there's been a bit of fluidity lacking from Brighton as well this year. Yeah. Understandably though, they lost McAllister and Caicedo, so you're gonna struggle.
Yeah, Brighton beating Forest 1-0.
Good, just a good win for Brighton after that 4-0 against Roma in the Europa League.
Late point salvaged for Bournemouth against Sheffield United, who were good, I thought.
Yeah,
probably the best that Sheffield United have
been for a while.
Although Bournemouth had so many chances, they had that penalty as well. 32 shots they had. Solanke slipping on that penalty. Missed a couple of chances, big chances as well.
Mm.
Very late equaliser, 96th minute equaliser for Corley Woodrow for Luton against Palace.
This was a good game.
And also Palace starting to look pretty good under Ole Glasner.
Oh yeah, you're already seeing the changes. Some of their football.
Yeah, great.
With Palace, it was better finishing. The Eze attempt from near halfway that skims top of the net.
Good.
He is just... Man, he's elite. There's a thing that's wild about Palace. They've conceded more goals. Dude, that guy could play anywhere. Genuinely, Eze could play in any... I think he would grace any midfield. I think he's that good. There was a thing with Palace, a stat that came up about how they've conceded more goals in the last 10 or injury time than any other team in the Premier League. And you can see again here, like, the failure to hold possession. Actually, Ian talks about this in Match of the Day. The ball actually ends up at the feet of an experienced player for Palace. And the Luton players just absolutely collapse onto him. If we're critical of Eze in any respect, maybe could have got tighter a couple of times to Luton players in the build-up for the equaliser. But these are small margins. But overall, he was brilliant. And you see the reaction from the Palace fans when that goal goes in, that equaliser goes in, they were just like, the amount of chances. It should have been 2-3-0 by that point.
But that's the thing though, I mean, we've talked about this before. You'd rather have your side creating chances because you know that finishing will click eventually.
Palace really showed us something the other day. I thought they looked really good.
Yeah.
But Luton, credit to them. That's a really good point.
Yeah.
And some great resilience. And obviously with Forest losing, brings them within three.
Yeah, definitely. Great win for Wolves at home to Fulham. Iwobi got a 98th minute consolation, which was a lovely goal actually. But, yeah, Wolves are just doing so well this season, man. I think Gary O'Neill is genuinely in a shout for Manager of the Year. I think he's in the conversation.
He is. Look how safe he's made them. 2 points behind West Ham, behind Moyes, who is apparently doing a horrible job.
Don't do it.
West Ham actually with a good comeback against Burnley.
Mm.
We've got some got some lovely ball players at Burnley. And just, I don't know, I kind of feel for them because they are a team that's tried to play some football, but it just hasn't worked for them really at all this year. I mean, got players like Larsson, who I like, Jacob Brun Larsson. Players like that at Burnley, who I just love watching. But a really good comeback from West Ham. I saw a piece about West Ham recently, basically, I think it was to the extent of enjoy Lucas Paqueta as long as you can, just in terms of the quality that he turns in regularly for them. He got a lovely goal.
Yeah.
And that's it, right?
For the Premier League. Great weekend for Premier League football.
It was.
Let's just quickly round up some other stuff.
Yes.
Real Madrid beating Celta Vigo 4-0 in the Bernabeu. Another goal for Vinicius. Two own goals. And an Arda Güler.
Lovely finish. This reminded me of...
really good.
I'm going to be a sacrilegious here. It reminded me of Alexander Pato. Touch.
A lovely shout.
The way he went round the keeper and flicked in the corner, I thought, that's Pato vibes. Like... And then, like, Ancelotti, like, clearly is excited about him. And as I was, I love the way they all go to celebrate with him. It felt it's like iconic, like, you know, first goal. And he was obviously absolutely hyped. But the way that all the players came in for the congratulation was really nice, really lovely. Very special. Scarily good young player.
Very good. Can we have a little shout out for Betis Villarreal?
What, red cards and goals?
Red cards and goals. We should do this. This should be a new segment that comes at the end of the game, at the end of each episode. And basically it's our game of the week. And it's never the best game. It's only the game that has the most combined red cards and goals.
Do you know, there's two red cards. The scoring starts quite late in this one. Mm. And the funny thing about this match for Betis was, there were like three Betis players who've got like triple figure appearances. They all got, like, before the start of the game, they all got awards. I think William Carvalho and a few others. Carvalho, who was at one point moving to Arsenal every 6 months, it felt like. Do you remember that? We're like, Carvalho.
Oh, I remember it. And I was all for it because I just felt like, I think any team, you just need to get as many mustaches in your team as possible. Honestly, man, he's like.
It's that guy. So yeah, two reds and five goals in this game. Can I just say that again? Two reds and five goals in this game. Give a quick shout out to a game I just clocked randomly when I was checking out games to round up? It's a bit random. Boca Juniors 3, Belgrano 2, Edinson Cavani hat trick.
There you go.
And it was, can I just say, I wanted to shout this out very briefly because are there many things more of a vibe in world football than Edinson Cavani scoring a hat trick at home for Boca? I don't think there are.
In 2024.
It's so iconic.
back to La Liga very quickly. Cadiz beating Atleti 2-0, which is a big result from the weekend.
Big yikes for Atleti. Yeah.
Big yikes. Barcelona beating Mallorca on Friday 1-0. Mm. Real Sociedad getting past Granada 3-2. So the top of the La Liga table is quite interesting because Girona also beat Osasuna. So wins for Real Madrid, Girona and Barcelona mean the top three is as you were.
But Atleti, 10 games to go, yeah.
Atleti losing an Athletic Club beating Las Palmas means there's only a 2-point gap.
Athletic Club slightly ending up with a Copa del Rey and a Champions League. That's a hell of a season if they pull that off.
I mean, Valverde, man.
Love that guy.
Next game for Atleti is at home to Barca.
Tasty.
Yes, spicy. I imagine meatballs. We will probably talk about that next week. Quickly in the Bundesliga, we talked about it, but Bayer Leverkusen beating...
Wolfsburg 2-0.
Wolfsburg, Wolfsburg down to 10 men in the first half. Moritz Jens got two yellows quite early on. He was off after, how long was it?
28 minutes? Half an hour. Slightly similar to the Köln game.
Yeah. Another lovely goal from Florian Wirtz.
Yeah, lovely volley. The German Baggio. Oh, dear. I keep talking about that.
Can you imagine if Florian Wirtz comes back next season with a little, like, tiny little ponytail?
Look it to my face.
I think he should do it just for the lols.
Lovely player.
Bayern absolutely hammering Mainz. We talked about that.
Harry Kane with a hat trick.
Yes. Well, technically a dryer pack, but you know, I don't want to nitpick.
Mainz, who are really, I mean, they're not looking long for this world in the Bundesliga. It has to be said.
only 3 points clear of Darmstadt at the bottom of the Bundesliga, 2 points behind Köln in the relegation playoff spot, but there's a gap opening up now. Bochum are 7 points clear of Köln, but Bochum lost at home to Freiburg on the weekend. And wins for Dortmund, Leipzig, and Frankfurt on the weekend as well. Jadon Sancho got his first goal since returning to Dortmund. Nice assist from Julian Brandt. Marcel Sabitzer got sent off in that game as well. And quick shout for Serie A. Inter were very, very good against Bologna.
1-0 early goal. Yeah, I mean, the Inter steamroller continues against a very good Bologna side, winning by a goal to keep them ahead. Juventus dropping points against Atalanta in a very good game. Couple from Coat Miners. Uncharacteristic misses from wasteful finishing from Chiesa. You don't see that often. But a really, really good game. Cambiasso getting one for Juventus in that game, I suppose the other headline. And elsewhere, Milan beating Empoli with a deflected strike from Christian Pulisic, which is his 8th league goal of the season. So yeah, all quite interesting in Serie A. Just a good league.
Just a good league. Always the average. Do you want to, I just added it up. The average squad number for Inter starting 11.
What's that?
Just take a guess. Bear in mind, Jan Sommer was in goal wearing number 1 and Marcus Thuram was up front wearing number 9. What do you think the average squad number was? I mean, you know, bear in mind in the good old days, we used to have 1 to 11.
24.
32.
Oh my goodness, 32. That's wild.
The combined numbers of Inter starting 11 was 352.
That's absurd.
Just a very quick shout before we go. Shouts to Spurs, who knocked out Manchester City in the Women's FA Cup on penalties. Yeah, really 96th minute equaliser for Beth England for Spurs. Chelsea getting through 1-0 against Everton. Leicester also going through after beating Liverpool 2-0. And Manchester United beating Brighton 4-0 on the weekend, on Saturday as well. So yeah, great weekend for Women's FA Cup. I'm sure Flo and the gang will be talking about that all on Counter Press.
Yeah.
But anything else you want to talk about from the weekend?
No, I think that's good actually. Can I just say, like, this weekend really delivered football-wise? It really delivered. Just some great action. Like, as even rewatch the game, obviously, yesterday.
Oh, go on. What Champions League final from the 90s did you rewatch randomly on a Sunday night? Go on, tell me.
No, the Liverpool City, I was rewatching it, and it felt like, in many ways, it was even better. You know what it was like? You like a ragu or like a really good stew the next day.
Oh, yeah, you always do the reheat.
Yeah, it's like that. It's very much, yeah.
Do you know what? I had breakfast this morning and I just casually rewatched the entirety of Dortmund's 3-1 win over Juve in 97.
Oh my God, classic.
I mean, I didn't. I'm just saying that's something that I expect you to say. How was your weekend? Yeah. Oh, yeah. I actually watched all of Ajax's European Cup victories in a row, but not just the finals, every game from every run. I actually still have them on VHS.
I feel attacked.
Yeah, well, good. People won't know this, but the amount of times where we go somewhere and someone, like, football come up in conversation and Musa just casually says, like, I was actually watching Real Madrid's run in like 2002 and my fucking eyes.
Of course he was. Like,
why is Ryan on the floor? It's because his eyes rolled so hard that he's just create my own vertigo.
I better get myself out of here after this.
Yeah, you better. You haven't even got a roll neck on today. So
red card my own podcast.
All right, everyone, we're going to leave that for today. We hope everyone's staying safe, staying well. Don't forget to check Counterpressed. Check Wright's House on late Tuesday. Ian and I will be recording after the Arsenal-Porto game. Moose and I will be back on Thursday. We'll round up the rest of the Champions League stuff. And then, until then, don't forget to check the Stadio Archers place on Spotify. Speaking of which, playing out on track by Lamine Fofana, track called Bench Me Mode 2 Red Eye. Anything you'd like to add, Musa Gwanga?
Nothing further.
All right, everyone, much love, and we'll be back with you on Thursday.
See you then.